was invited to say some poems vis-a-vis Memorial Day, I was a little nervous because I'm not a big fan of what I call easy patriotism. But once I heard Matthew's poems and Sheila's poems and Marjorie's poems, I knew that that was the last thing that I should worry about. I'm going to say a few poems, all of which were prompted by events and feelings that I wish I never had. I wish I'd never had written these poems. But I don't take back a single word. The first poem is simply called The Ballad of a Returnee. This is about a good friend of mine who goes back to Vietnam annually. He's created an orphanage there for a lot of children who were fathered by Americans when they were on duty there. The Ballad of a Returnee. He knew he was older and taller. He knew that the towns were the same. What made them feel suddenly smaller? What made him feel somehow to blame for all that was done to a village to save a surrounded platoon? The huts were just booty to pillage on a hillscape as spare as the moon. A man with one leg saw him walking and offered him tea on a mat. They spent the whole afternoon talking while his wife cooked the head of a cat. It wasn't his squad he remembered. It wasn't the sergeant at Way who found his lieutenant dismembered and buried him there where he lay. What troubled him most were the places that once were just places to fight. He thought of the night fighters' faces all blackened to blend with the night. The whores in their teens were forgotten, and gone were their overnight dates, and grown were the idly begotten whose fathers were back in the States. He never regretted returning. At least it had lessened his dread, but the toll it took for the learning was 58,000 dead. He walked all alone by the water. He sat all alone on the shore, like a man making peace with the slaughter. But the price for this peace was war. What is interesting, by the way, I did a little research on this. This is for you, free. All of the wars from Korea until now, except for one, were presidential wars, presidentially chosen and decided. Congress had nothing to do with it. The only one they had something to do with was the Persian Gulf War, when George Herbert Walker Bush needed their support to drive the people out of Kuwait, and he got it, I think, by 2 votes. But all the rest were presidential, all of them. Now, do you have any idea how many men and women have lost their lives from Korea until now? It's 380,000. That's about 56,000 more than we lost in World War I. And it's ongoing, of course. I wrote this particular poem during the first decade of this century, which was probably the worst. Probably the worst. We were driven into a phony war, presidentially decided, same way. This is called In the Time of the Tumult of Nations. We thought that the worst was behind us in the time of the tumult of nations. We saved and we planned for the future in the time of the tumult of nations. The crowds in the streets were uneasy in the time of the tumult of nations. We murdered our annual victims in the time of the tumult of nations. We were fined if we smoked in the cities in the time of the tumult of nations. We gave and deducted our givings in the time of the tumult of nations. We kept the bad news from the children in the time of the tumult of nations. We huddled in burglar-proof houses in the time of the tumult of nations. We voted for men we distrusted in the time of the tumult of nations. In the time of the tumult of nations, the ones who were wrong were the loudest. In the time of the tumult of nations, the poets were thought to be crazy. In the time of the tumult of nations, the president answered no questions. In the time of the tumult of nations, protesters were treated like traitors. In the time of the tumult of nations, the airports were guarded by soldiers. In the time of the tumult of nations, young women kept mace in their purses. In the time of the tumult of nations, the rich were exempt in their mansions. In the time of the tumult of nations, we waited for trouble to happen. In the time of the tumult of nations, we lived for the weak ends like children. Like children, we clung to our playthings in the time of the tumult of nations. We huddled in burglar-proof houses in the time of the tumult of nations. We said that the poor had it coming in the time of the tumult of nations. We readied our handguns for trouble in the time of the tumult of nations. We tuned into war every evening in the time of the tumult of nations. We watched as the bombs burned the cities in the time of the tumult of nations. The name of the game was destruction in the time of the tumult of nations. We said we were once better people in the time of the tumult of nations. We pretend we are still the same people in the time of the tumult of nations. This poem is about a young girl and, by implication, many others. It's called Parting Shot. Nothing symphonic will come of this. Nothing of consequence to silence those whose business is creating funerals where widows in their 20s carry folded flags to empty bedrooms. Pronouncers and announcers govern from their desks, while corporals and captains pay the price in loss. I cite the history of Danielle Green. She basketballed her way from poverty to Notre Dame, played guard with champions, and took a shot she took left-handed from the paint and rarely missed. Later in Iraq, a bomb exploded close enough to claim her shooting hand. Others lost more, and many lost everything that anyone can lose. Some say that poetry has other things to sing about than that. If that's the case, what good is poetry that shies away from pain and amputation? What else can make us feel, not merely know, that severed limbs and lives can never be replaced? And all for what? I was watching a program that was hosted by the actor. That was hosted by the actor James Gandolfini, and he was interviewing mostly women, wives or mothers of soldiers who had lost their lives in in Iraq. And he interviewed one woman, an older woman, and I'm not going to say anything more. I couldn't watch it. If a true poem is one you wish you never had to write, then this is it. Don't read it just to say you've read it. That's like the traveler who went to Spain so he could say he went to Spain. What's here is what exists between the lines. The mother of a captain killed by snipers read his final letter postmarked on the day he died. She read it often after that. Each time she closed the envelope, she slowly licked it shut so that her tongue could taste him in the last thing he ever touched. This poem is called A Newer Order. A Newer Order. There's a reference in it to an Air Force general named Curtis LeMay, who was responsible for the firebombing of Tokyo. People don't remember that. They remember the nuclear bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. But the firebombing of Tokyo killed more people than those two atomic bombs. There's also a reference to a man named Sheldon, not by name. His name is Sheldon Adelson. He's a billionaire, a close friend of this Trump. And he owns a large casino in Las Vegas, and he's given millions to the government of Israel to keep the Palestinian people completely subjugated, particularly in Gaza. What is interesting is Gaza is, I think, 1/8 the size of our smallest state, Rhode Island. It's 1/8 the size of Rhode Island. Rhode Island has a population of 1 million. Gaza has a population of 2 million. 2 million. They're deprived of water except for 2 hours a day, electricity about 2 hours a day. A newer order. Clenching his cigar, an Air Force general was bent on bombing Vietnam back to the Stone Age. A war earlier, he firebombed Tokyo to ashes, human and otherwise. A Las Vegas billionaire demanded that Gaza be bombed back to the Stone Age. Both men resembled one another, fat in the middle, frowningly serious, surrounded by sycophants and affluent. Without 4 stars and a fortune fleeced from suckers at casino games, they'd be ignorable. Frankly, they sold the Stone Age short. Aborigines learned to work with tools and fire, hunted animals instead of one another, housed their children in the safety of caves, and dealt with danger well enough to keep the race from vanishing. Today we do the opposite. History confirms we've killed more people in the last 50 years or so than any nation, now or ever, executed thousands and stocked the country with more weapons than people. Our current tally of daily homicides is 80, compared to 35 per year in Japan. Now, to match that kind of violence, the Stone Age fails to qualify. But who am I to talk? Today, while hundreds suffer and die in Gaza, I'm watching baseball on TV, where millionaires in uniform are playing a boys' game to keep me shamefully distracted from a world we say we're saving. This is a farewell poem. It's called "And the Time Is." We've come to the point of decision, and the hands of the clock say, "Be careful." We've learned from the past that our choices are one or the other or neither, and the hands of the clock say, "Be careful." We've readied ourselves for the challenge of weighing the odds and the chances of what will result from our choices, and the hands of the clock say, "Be hopeful." We're not what we were when we started, and the hands of the clock say, "It's over." Our yesterdays lengthen like shadows that fade when we no longer cast them, and the hands of the clock say, "It's over." Despite what it brings to surprise us, we treasure each day in its passing, though we know that we pass as it passes, and the hands of the clock say, "Discover." We sit on the porch every evening, and the hands of the clock say, "Be watchful." We study the leaves in their turning from green to vermilion to purple, and the hands of the clock say, "Be watchful." While we stare at the sky in its vastness and name every star in the distance, we dwindle to scale in the balance, and the hands of the clock say, "Be grateful." The dead come to life in our dreaming, and the hands of the clock say, "Remember." The words of a prophet keep haunting the ones who ignored him when living, and the hands of the clock say, "Remember." The world that we think is around us is neither before nor behind us, but always within us. Within us. And the hands of the clock say, "Forever." Thank you.